This episode is brought to you by Foster Sundry, a specialty grocery located in Bushwick, Brooklyn.
This week on Meat and Three, it's our season four finale, and we're sharing some of our greatest kitchen joys.
Maybe most people consider making it too much work or too messy, but this is the food that's worth the work and worth the wait.
You always know where the thing is because you put it away the right way the first time.
You just sort of stand there and, you know, with your hand on your hip and one leg outstretched, glass of wine in your hand, staring into the refrigerator going, okay, speak to me.
Oh yeah, what are you doing with the celery tonight?
I'm making a simple syrup for a gin cocktail with the celery. And I also found a recipe for a celery soup that's going to use up the celery and the potatoes and some of that dill that we still have hanging out in there.
Tune in and be inspired to find the joy in your kitchen. And don't forget to subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts.
Good morning. I'm Emily Pearson. We are back. I'm here in the studio with my co-hosts, Patrick Martins and Brandon Hoy.
Welcome back. Season 5, episode 340.
Did you just make that up?
No, for sure it's episode 340. Season 5, I'm not sure if we're in the second half of season 4 or if this is the launch OG of season 5. Part, yeah. I think of the main course OG, we're in like episode 40-ish. Mm-hmm. Or something like that. We've been on since May of 2018, so over a year. Brandon, have you loved every moment of that?
You guys have been eating your blueberries and your acai, right?
Yes.
Your brains are sharp this morning.
A little Brooklyn.
All types of memory.
All types of memory.
Fresh material. I like it.
Did you have an acai bowl this morning?
You know I didn't.
Bacon, egg, and cheese.
Well, so, I mean...
That's what I smell.
We're back. It's been a two-week hiatus. It was the end of summer. U.S. Open is on. Football, college football has started. Regular NFL starting tonight. Is everyone rested?
Mm-hmm.
Did you take
school started today.
I know.
Yeah, it took me 4.5 hours to get, like, 1 mile.
How many school buses and garbage trucks was Patrick stuck behind?
It took me, as the crow flies... 3 seconds. Took me 4 hours. We woke up at 5 a.m. We were just stuck behind a garbage truck for the full mile. Mm-hmm. And the school buses. They shut down the streets because the school buses don't work really on that day. They only work a little bit. So everyone's driving their kids to school. A lot of Ubers, a lot of cars. You know what I mean?
There's
by next
more
week,
volume.
It's fewer cars, more school buses. This is like every single parent is delivering their kid to school.
Did you do drop-off today?
Yeah, I dropped off, but it was so late. It took us so long. Anne just took both kids in. So she dropped Max off first and then just...
You did the adult drop-off where you drop your wife off with the kids. And you're like, all right, you walk down the block, gotta go.
And then I licked the Kleenex and rubbed it on her cheek. You know,
exactly.
She was a little dirty.
See, I do the thumb. Just straight lick the thumb, just... Skirker, 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 skirker.
You got to get with that on the sampler.
Let's
record after the show. Eric, are you on the line? Eric Koss of the Alameda Sun?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can. Yeah. Is it back to school in Alameda also?
Oh, for sure. It is, indeed. In fact,
they start early, though.
Totally disappeared this week because they went back to school and didn't produce their stories. But I was okay. I figured it out. It was all right.
You were left hanging on your own.
We missed you, Eric.
I was. Yeah, those 2 weeks were quite Patrick-free, so it was a little sad for me,
too. A little sad, I can imagine, for everybody. But now you are doing your new show with Brian Kenny that starts this season. Can you tell us quickly what that is?
Yeah, we're doing some development on what we're calling Way Out West, which is going to be Heritage Radio Network's first West Coast broadcast. And it should be kind of an interesting mix of history, art, and, of course, food. Brian and I are both kind of musicians on the side, so we might sneak in some local music too. It could be kind of fun.
Awesome. Well, thanks for not giving up on us for a few more weeks.
I also think that Brian would consider himself whatever his real job title is on the side. He's a musician first. and right. archivalist on the side.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Indeed.
Hope you have a few jam sessions from like one of the Hearst properties. You know, ghost hunting on the Hearst Ranch with your guitar with you.
So you know, I saw a bear this summer. I mean, this past weekend.
Aren't we lucky you're walking here?
Out to the car. We're staying at Catherine's house. This is Warwick, New York. She's walking outside, and the neighbor is like, "Get back in, get back in." And right across a little country road was easily 2,000. I mean, a huge male, 1 year old. The neighbor said.
Very cool.
I mean, she could have had a face off with this thing. Now, they are very nice. They don't attack most people. They are fearful of you, but I can't. It's just awesome and interesting to a New Yorker that these animals are allowed to live with so many people and they don't kill them. I mean, because it is dangerous. A kid runs out into the yard there and there could be a 2,000-pound bear. And
how do you think
the
bear feels? He's like, these humans, they're just allowed to move wherever they want.
That's true.
And dump their crap all over the place, and we're not allowed to eat it. What the heck?
I actually really admire it. I think it's awesome that we didn't exterminate them because of the potential danger. They live with that risk. I mean, Anne literally walked into one.
But at the same time, you were not thrilled that there was not you didn't feel protected as a homeowner there or someone visiting.
No, they could just literally be in your yard. You have to look.
This is not allowed. We have to.
Anyway, it's just funny.
Mike,
it's cool.
My cousins in suburban New Jersey have seen black bears in their neighborhoods on occasion, just, you know, loping down the street. It's kind of an unusual thing, but they somehow, I don't know, come down from Sussex County or something where it's nice and woodsy and occasionally find themselves in the suburbs.
So, Emily, you went to a wedding and you said that this weekend and you said the food was excellent. It was one of the best food weddings. What made you say that?
It was a couple that very much cares about. You would have loved it. They care about where they source from. They wanted their friends to be a part of their menu. They raise acorn finished pigs and do their own charcuterie, so that was important to them. They're very close to the Vermont border, so they brought in cheeses from Jasper Hill and a few other cheese-making friends, and then they did a family-style meal. It was not one big communal table for the sit-down, as I know you like to do, Patrick, but it was very elegant. They have their own property. It was not an inexpensive
generous
wedding.
Generous portions. Was it a grazing event? Did you have to graze, or was the food brought to you?
The food was brought to you at the actual wedding. The day before, there was a welcome party that was a grazing event. But it was really pretty. They have 400 acres, and some of the guests who were staying on the property woke up to chainsaws because the florists were cutting down greenery and saplings from the property to like hang in the tent. So it was it was an expensive one for sure. But it was cool to be a guest. Brandon, I kind of thought you were a fantasy football guy. Am I right?
I am. Yes.
So how did your draft go?
It went all right.
Who should I be rooting for on your behalf this year?
Ezekiel Elliott.
No, I didn't get it. I didn't get Zeke. I got a bunch of old football players that I probably shouldn't have got.
Like, steroids will keep them strong. Maybe. Don't worry.
Just LeSean McCoy.
Just because of like nostalgia?
Who's Michael Crabtree.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's see. I got Michael Thomas of the Saints.
Okay.
Yeah. Adam Thielen
anybody
of the Vikings.
Anybody who's playing tonight?
Who's tonight? The Bears and the Packers. No, I didn't. No, yeah. I have Mitchell Trubisky, but he's on the bench today. Mm. So.
Oh. Too bad.
I don't like football anymore for some reason. I want Eli Manning to do well, but that's about it.
I think for me, it's the culture of it. It's like as much as I am sad the summer's over, it's the fall is here. There's something about like
they're a bunch of goons.
Just being on the couch on a Sunday night for me, college football. If I want to gather with friends, it's great. There are Michigan bars in New York that are fun to be
at.
Can I ask you? We're both blue. Go blue. But also, if something like winter is so dismal and there's not a lot to look forward to. And football fills that hole for me.
Well,
I don't know
that as a Californian. I mean, New Yorkers like the winter, but
I'm from California.
You,
I hate
so
the winter.
Like
I'm saying I survive through the winter based on just football.
Yeah, you've
hibernation.
Had
football hibernation.
Football hibernation.
For people who
and
don't
like
know, Brandon walks around
pounds.
In a helmet from November to January.
Yeah, but that's not because I like football.
All right. We also have a very special guest in studio with us. We have Chef Rich Ho. Rich's restaurant, Ho Foods, brings home-style and modernized Taiwanese food to the East Village and pays homage to classic flavors and techniques by way of the San Gabriel Valley in California, which I read is the mecca of Taiwanese food in America.
Oh, my God. That was an incredible intro, Emily. Yes. Am I doing this the right way?
You are
yes.
doing this okay. the right way. Great. Up close and personal with the mic.
Great. I've been in the room this whole time, too. I've just been shy and quiet.
Yeah, he's really going on right now. God.
But we'll get this thing going.
Somebody put a muzzle on this guy.
Yeah. I mean, so we should ask you, do you have a fantasy football team? Are you a football guy?
I don't. I watch occasionally, but I'm not much of a
They're
football
busy
guy,
in the kitchen.
Which feels anti-American, which I'm not.
good.
Very much
We're
American.
We're very pro-American here.
All right, we are going to jump into our first segment, the Weekly Based, our round-robin question in light of this morning's conversation. What's your favorite mode of transportation and why?
A good one.
Mm. Wow.
We know Patrick is
like
riding
trucks.
Behind.
I like trucks, an 18-wheeler truck when I drive myself.
My dad was a trucker.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. I guess we're in a trucking container.
Yeah, well, this is actually
from Taiwan.
Sure. Yours, yeah. Emily?
I really like the subway.
Mine would be walking, 100% walk. I am a walker.
I'm
you
ashamed.
Guys
I'm
me.
Ashamed. I didn't think of that.
You
okay,
see
it would
me?
Be walking.
You see me walking? Like I'm walking. Walking is
scratch my truck
my
idea.
Thing.
Yeah.
I'm a walker.
Rich, how about you?
I love scooters.
Yeah. In New York or just in general?
I think scooters anywhere in the world is fun.
You and know. Scooters like these new Revel Vespas outside, or like
they're everywhere,
or
oh
the
one, God.
Or like the Razor scooter that's electric.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I feel about the Revel, but like those, like a little Vespa somewhere. But I think no matter where you go, it's fun. It's like I feel like it's the modern day version of riding a horse through a village.
No, that's
you
know? True.
You just got back from Paris. Did they have scooters there?
Yeah. Yes, they did. They had scooters, and
that's how they get around.
It's the only method.
I think there's something more endearing about doing it in another country. Maybe it's just New York. It feels like.
Yeah, I can't imagine you wearing a Vespa helmet.
It looks kind of like my headphones here, no?
So our first.
I'm just going to be a little bit old school and say I'm still in love with my 2-year-old car that I got brand new. It's the first brand new car I've ever owned, and I still really like it. So
what is it?
I'm
a Prius?
With the car.
It's definitely a hybrid, isn't it?
It's a Chevy Cruze. It has auto shut off, but not.
You mean like a button that turns the car off?
Patrick's car has the auto shut off. It's very annoying in New
York.
Yeah,
when you pull up to a stop sign and it just turns off.
Yeah, no, you can turn it off. I always live with it off. So let's get into our, what do we call this section? The Weekly Base?
This is still the Weekly Base.
All right, that was our round robin.
Oh, that was our round robin.
This is our first official. So tiny restaurants. Let's talk about the dynamic of tiny, tiny restaurants. Rich, you want to start? You have a 10-seat restaurant in the East Village.
Yes, we do. It's very small. I think when I tell people it's small, they don't believe how small it is. It's about the size of the studio. To have a tiny sit-down restaurant that's not a sushi bar is... It's a very bad idea, I think.
In New York, especially.
In New York, it's a very bad idea. But we do it because I think people are happy and we want to serve them. And we treat it like a real restaurant. In the wintertime, people come in and we have a coat check, which sounds silly because there's 3 tables. And we're selling noodles.
You also have to walk through the kitchen to get to the bathroom.
Yes, which you know the health department doesn't like, but I think it seems unfair to serve people beer and not let them pee, right?
Yeah, it's true.
You know,
absolutely.
Also, the health department doesn't like a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense,
right?
You know, you're talking about 10 seats. How many customers do you see a day?
Right,
50.
Yeah, maybe a little more than
60?
That. 60. Yeah.
And like maybe 10% of them walk through the bathroom.
Yeah, a lot.
You know, probably not that crazy.
Yeah, but it's.
I love that you do coat check. It also just means that you are welcoming people. You are saying like you're here, stay a while, be comfortable, eat, drink, have a good time. You don't have to be shoving your stuff in the corner.
Yeah.
Do you feel as a guest feel pressure to talk to the sushi person or the in a very small or a very tiny restaurant? I feel a little bit pressure to say hi, entertain you. This gets into our next question on loneliness.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you don't have a huge team there. So, I mean, you're kind of working solo.
Yeah, we have, you know, it's 2 people working at a time. And I, this loneliness question, that's a nice way of tying that in. I think it's an odd experience because, I mean, the customers are right there, whether they want to talk to you or not, and you can hear what everyone's saying. And and I think the good thing is it's kind of self filters out people that don't want that, and we have really great and very kind customers that kind of like to be there.
Are they semi-performing because they know everyone can hear them?
But that's what I think. I think that no one is themselves in a small place like that. Or it's very hard to be yourself. You have to be a very confident person to, you know, and the tables are 6 inches away from each other. You know, on top of that, there's only 3 tables. I'm making this sound like a very unwelcoming restaurant, but
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If you had a large party come in, would you put tables together to accommodate? Would you put all like one party at like the 3 tables?
12 people?
Would you give up your whole restaurant to one party?
So
yeah.
You know, we don't like to have a ton of rules at the restaurant. So if 10 people come in and we can seat them, then, you know, we will.
You'll do that.
And they'll just take over the whole place. And maybe they have some kids. They're running around. And I just think if you made all the effort to come, then let's try to fit you in if possible. And it's a weird thing to be able to just take over a restaurant.
I would say, Patrick, we should try this, but we probably couldn't gather 10 people.
No,
amongst
who would
the
want to come with us? Unless we met nobody. Some people outside.
We would have to go to a bar and just invite them to see if we could convince them to go
or
to
the people
with
who
us.
I park my car with, the attendants. I'm like, hey, wouldn't you get off?
Yeah.
You go.
I had a recent experience where the restaurant would not put tables together for a large party.
That's upsetting. Why not? Yeah. That's moving it an inch.
It happens, though. It happens, though. You know what? It's difficult for a lot of places. Logistically, it's not that. It's not as easy. 10 people, like 10 people means that 10 people's worth of food needs to come up at the same amount of time at the same time,
right.
Which could really throw a wrench in the rest of everybody else's dining experience. So usually when people won't do it, it's not because they don't want you there. It's because it screws everybody else.
They're like,
screws everybody
officially
else
you're
who's there.
Not one table.
Right. Be like, we'll put you together, but we will only serve you as though you were
I'm
5'2" tall.
Because I remember,
I have
to be honest, in the early, I mean, we've always accepted those large parties and we thrive off that. We love it. But in the early days, it used to be so difficult. And you really had to for years, we had to focus on how to do it. Mm-hmm. And we did have to have some rules. Like if it's like parties over 10, we have them pre-order stuff so we know what it's going to be. So we're prepared. We can be ready to do it. It's not just like throwing a wrench in the whole night. And this is just so that everybody, it's not them. Taking care of the party of 10 is easy. It's taking care of the rest of the room while there's a party of 10.
Understood.
And then everyone's ordering a different kind of cocktail. I'm like, just
the bar gets backed up. All of a sudden, you have 10 cocktails, and the rest, and like everybody in the rest of, like pretty much everybody else's like experience goes on hold.
And then the lady comes with, or the guy comes with the cocktail, you know, and they're taking everyone's order. And some people are like, I need a menu. I'm like, it's gonna be another hour.
That
before
is Patrick's
drink. Just order a dark and stormy.
Or order a beer.
It's the same with food, though. When you're in a large group and it gets around, you get to the third person and they're like, I think I'm going to need a little while. And then you're just like, oh my God, they're not going to put in this order till they come back and get your order. Now everybody is sitting here.
Do you don't know your favorite pizza? Margarita
I'm slightly guilty of that, but to offset it, I have them start at the other end so that I'm never.
Are
the
you
person
really
holding
general?
It up.
I like it.
I'm like, please start at the. If there's 10 people and I'm on the fence, I'm like, start over there. By the time you get to me, I'll be
and
ready.
I like how you consider that less annoying.
Oh, I know it's not. I just try to soften it a little. But Rich's style also works because you have a small
intimate
menu and a limited number of offerings even on the drink side, right? Do you offer sake or was that only for me and Patrick secretly?
Sometimes.
That one.
Yeah. We have to go to the bathroom.
There's some secret stuff.
There's a secret
there.
Compartment. So can we, since we're going on a roll here, go jump to the question about lingering?
In fact, I was hoping to because we were lingering on the
other topic. I thought you had a transition there,
I had a transition.
Up,
but so if you had a 10 top, for example.
I don't linger ever. ever. I'm never in the way. I also consider not accelerating out of a green light. You know, light goes green and you're in a car and you don't. That's lingering. You're affecting something negatively.
We were in Nashville 2 weeks ago for literally less than 8 hours. And Patrick,
riding my horn the
Patrick
whole time.
Patrick proceeds to give me a tutorial on how to properly stop at a stop sign. He's like, you got to come hard and just stop real hard, but then you got to go. And you kind of don't even care about the people who maybe got there a second before.
The line doesn't matter. You could be a car lane.
Disagree.
Back. If you come to
like a zipper, the world works. Like, if you don't follow these rules, then you're the reason why the zipper comes apart. Because you can't shove two links into the zipper at once.
No. What I'm saying is that, no, line stop. Line, 1-1-1-1-1-1, you honor. But when there is no one at the thing, you have to come to a complete stop. The other people kind of just keep on going. So they never come to a complete stop. So even though they might have beat you there, they just never stop. So by stopping,
here's the thing.
You can accelerate.
Patrick doesn't really consider his passengers in the vehicle. No. And it doesn't really matter if you get that abrupt stop right there.
But also, we all know one thing about Patrick. That the world revolves around him. So that being said, he has the right of way every time he's anywhere.
If you come to a complete stop, is the thing. People don't come to complete stops at stop signs. They just kind of into the intersection.
I failed my first driving test because I didn't come to complete stops. I had to take it again.
Yep.
Well, and in a driving test setting, important. I'm with Patrick. Always a complete stop. Come on, Eric.
Okay. Oh, but not in the thing.
So wait, I want to go back to lingering, especially Rich, since you do have this small restaurant. You know, when you go and dine elsewhere, do you linger? Or do you try to consider your own restaurant?
Do you kick people out? Yeah, all this.
We don't kick people out, and I think for the most part, you know, our windows are very clear, so there's people looking at you the entire time.
So you let he lets the other customers do the dirty work.
Like,
yeah,
they are, and it's a very. The more and more I'm describing this, the more and more it sounds like But anyways, it usually works out. People are pretty...
That happens in a lot of restaurants. Right. Like when a restaurant's busy, you feel it when you're at the table. So it's like I went to Sammy's Romanian on Tuesday, and there was only one other table there, and I lingered. Aww. We lingered like crazy.
Well, hold on. There was nothing else to do. It was his birthday. Happy birthday.
Sammy's Romanian's a fun place, though,
And like we just made friends with the other table that was there, the table of three, and we kind of just became one group. But that was like, that's a situation where lingering, obviously, there's not a problem. Everyone was cool with lingering. Everyone was having fun. But when you're in a restaurant that's busy... Yeah. And you can see that there's people waiting. Like, it's hard to linger. Don't you feel like I would feel like a little bit of anxiety? There's a little bit of anxiety.
Some people have no awareness.
No, we don't push people out. We actually encourage lingering here. I mean, you see, like, we would like to get you out of a table if you're done eating. There's plenty of other places to go and drink.
Right, you have that luxury.
So,
your waiter will never be like, here's your thing. Thank you so much. Or we have another table, an eight top.
No, we don't kick people out of the tables. I mean, we might encourage them. There might be a time where we're just like, now you've been drinking just for 2 hours. We have a bar. Let's relocate you to the bar. Yeah. So people can eat.
I hope that people have that standard etiquette to realize it's crowded. We saw the line on the way in, or we know this is a hot ticket, whatever it might be. Like,
I think for the most part, people do. I think the people that don't are outliers. There definitely are people who just don't understand that there's other people that exist
or
in the world.
Or they feel we're entitled to this, and we paid for this.
Yeah, and they're the people who don't drive like a zipper.
I don't want to go home to New Jersey with my wife. I want to stay here for as long as I can.
I am a lingerer. I'm a big Jewish goodbyer.
Jewish goodbye?
Yeah.
Right. Or the Italian style of sitting there and letting it digest for a little bit while you talk and sip your wine and your espresso or whatever. And I feel like we went to this Italian restaurant recently and it was like hard to leave. I mean, there was no pressure to leave because
that's
a great
trait.
How
for
many
a restaurant
Jewish goodbyes are you currently in? Like someone who might be moving, or are you currently right now going through Jewish goodbyes via text or email?
Probably. Yeah, okay. Probably there's one or two.
Baker's dozen.
Yeah. You know, there's always like,
how long could it last? Forever?
I guess so. Yes, there's always a response sort of needed on a text. I've never thought about a Jewish goodbye by text.
Well, every life ends with a Jewish goodbye.
Oh, gosh.
Have you ever ended a Jewish goodbye?
I don't think they end.
No.
I think you're just like the Jews are like, just see you later.
Yeah.
All right. So everyone in this room has in some way been included in the pages of the New York Times.
Congratulations, Rich, on your first mention on the Taiwanese craze here in the East Coast.
Yeah, I would say the whole article was about the Taiwanese American cuisine. You were the lead photo and your name opened the first sentence. So what are the after effects of being in the New York Times?
A lot of Taiwanese people reach out to you when that happens. old and young. You know, you kind of feel like you're not the only Taiwanese person in the room anymore.
So all the Taiwanese people in New York come out of the woodworks because they saw the article.
That's fantastic. Had they been to your place yet, or is it the way they hear about it and then they call you?
Yeah, it's almost solely Taiwanese people that notice these
things. I like that was your experience. Mine was like every waste management company started reaching out to me being like, we'll pick up your garbage.
So I'm totally a believer in the New York Times is more of the Oprah effect, or like, you know, when the New York Times writes about you, you are now, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but you are now like mainstream. You're now the thing that everybody knows about. You're not just off the beaten path or something that only the hipsters know about. Like, you are now part of.
I think the Oprah effect is also relates to a sale or something like that. And in that case, I think that you're legit, that you're mainstream 100%. That it leads to sales of a schnitzel that we were premiering, not like in the old days. In the old days, yes, people really did. Like when they did the Slow Food Open, we got like 100 members in an hour, you know, and you sensed it. Now I think it's more, as you say, in the public eye, but not necessarily someone going online and spending $180 to buy something.
Oh yeah, or maybe it lives on. It's like if someone's doing their research about coming to New York, or they're searching certain keywords, it's like, or that you get to say, as seen in the New York Times.
That's
like,
what
that's
it is.
That's a super high accolade.
Have you been sent all of the like weird, like people just start giving you awards that aren't real awards? They send you these like pieces of paper that are like, we'll frame this for you.
Well, I have two stories about that. One day this guy, I hope I don't get him in trouble, but one day we were kind of in service and this guy shows up. And he's got like, he looks like kind of an 80s porn star with like amber glasses and a mustache and kind of this shiny viscose like jumpsuit. And he's got this thing in his jacket, like kind of hidden, like, you know, like a bag of weed or some, I don't know what he's got in there. And he comes in here. He's very antsy. He's like, hey, is Richard here? And I'm like,
you're like, I don't know if I want to tell him.
I don't want to talk to this guy. Not that I'm friendly towards everyone. I think he's, I want to hear. I want to know. I was like,
I'm scared of this guy just by the description.
He's like, yes, I'm here. And then he whips this thing out, and it turns out that he worked at the printing plant at New York Times, and they're not allowed to take the pieces of metal that they print with.
They call them the plates.
The plates, because I think, I guess during 9/11, someone took one and gave it to someone else. And it was this whole controversy. And he was like, don't tell anyone. I guess I'm telling a lot of people now.
Wow. You just fucked this guy. And like, also, his description, like, they know exactly
there's
who this
dude
is.
There's only one of these. Unless they all look like that. It's a huge factory.
Can you confirm we have zero listeners as usual, please? If we have a listener, I'd like to call them.
Anyways, I feel bad for forgetting his name, and everyone forgot
about
him.
Maybe it's better that you don't know his name. But what was the plate? Was it your picture?
It was our first mention, and it was our picture, and it was there in kind of this odd blue and just kind of cut up. And
so, where do you have it hanging? In the back of a closet somewhere?
Yeah, in the front of a closet somewhere.
That's so cool.
And I just thought it was so nice of him, and he didn't have to do that. And there's
what's your other story? You had two stories.
To the people who want to send these plaques to us, please don't call us anymore. call us every day at 3:30 on the dot.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's just, that's, I have
your
to be honest with you.
Your response should be, I have the original the plate. Most, I'll make my own plaque.
The most overwhelming thing about the New York Times is just every garbage spam type like phone call, it lasts months of people just, we saw you in the New York Times and we thought you might want this piece of shit.
Yeah.
We will send it to you and it's only $99.99.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is nice to be in the times. I mean, for a restaurant like yours, it might only come around every few years, you know, for a restaurant like us. If you're a very famous chef like David Chang, who knows, or Roberta's, I don't know, they might get in a lot more. But, you know, it's a real
but
special
then,
thing.
But then to be yeah. like the lead, to be the impetus for a piece, to be the lead of something. It's a to forever be part thing of, yeah, in a way. Yeah, 1,000%.
You know? But also there's a beginning. There was a beginning for David Chang and there was a beginning for us. Like, yeah. like you can't, you like you don't go into it with the perspective that this may never happen again. It's just no, the beginning yeah. of the right. venture,
of a career, of yeah.
the venture into whatever
well,
got you noticed
other,
in the first place.
And then other journalists and other, you know, other people know your name to now know that you're a source or a chef that they can go to or, you know. But I think it's really,
so
I wanted
gonna...
to be in the New York Times and I was devastated when my wedding announcement didn't make it.
Oh no, you'll be in for yeah. other things.
Okay, you'll pitch me, Patrick, thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, well, we need to come up with a different name for you. I don't think Emily Pearson sells, so that oh. takes us to the next question.
What's my new name? You told me Brenda wasn't a good one.
How do yesterday. You name how do you name restaurants? How do you name dishes? I am interested in this question because I've always wanted to name a lumberyard We're Lumber One or Chairman of the Boards. Also, right. if I had a mechanic, I would name it Lord of the Dings, an auto repair shop, Lord of the Dings. So I really care right. about names. And
I
sometimes a good name sells.
I always wanted to have a Vietnamese restaurant, you know, mostly focused on the chicken soup, the pho, and call it Pho Q.
Yes. And I think that exists, actually.
It does exist.
It's
does
Q,
it?
Yeah, and it's Q-U-E, like yeah. a Q. It does
oh,
exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck
yeah.
you.
Oh, that's smart.
And then Conway Twitty had an amusement park, Twitty City. And I thought if he had the children's park in Twitty City, it could be called Itty Bitty Twitty City.
Oh, that's so, a good one.
Know, I really.
I wanted to have a landscaping slash irrigation company called Mr. Misters. And the slogan was going to be no hose.
No.
Why Mr. Oh Mister?
Goodness. Like misters. Like, you know, the irrigation misters. Oh. They spray the misters. It was like, it was just all based on irrigation, oh. like spraying the misters.
I thought it was only about men.
Yeah. Mr. Mister, okay. Misters.
So what about yes. your names of your dishes and all that?
Or like even that? Just Whole Foods. You name the restaurant.
I don't have a good answer for that. But I think that, you know, these, it's kind of funny. Like, I don't have a good answer for it. We did pop-ups, and I was like, that's my last name. And, you know, if I wanted to, like, make up something, I would say that as a kid, you get made fun of a lot for having the last name Ho. But maybe that was just me, because my sister didn't. She was, like, very popular and very cool.
Wow. Where did you grow up in California?
Yeah, in California, in Arcadia, California. And
Arcadia. We were just there. Loved it.
Yeah.
We loved it. We ate at a place, and actually Max lost his little arrowhead, and they called us from our check
or guys
whatever
eat in
and sent it. We went to see the redwood trees. Loved it. And I love that hippie little town and all that. And oh, all
he doesn't remember
he
where
doesn't
he
remember
went.
The
that's
name.
You see, that's how baked. He avoids questions. He was like, I don't know. It was a place called I Was
How
high.
Big is yeah. Arcadia?
Arcadia is, I don't know.
It has a beautiful square.
It's very small.
I feel like there's another Arcadia or maybe Acadia in Northern California that you're thinking
about. Oh, yeah,
I
by Eureka. Yeah. No,
that's
yeah.
not
yeah.
what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. We're in Southern California where there's 4,000 Asian kids and in high school.
And a lot of Taiwanese restaurants or none?
There used to be a lot. It's a weird place. It's a place to grow up where Americans wanted to be Asian. You know, we had, it was weird. It was like kids wanted to fix up their civics and they would call. We're like, hey, man, you're Asian. Like, how do we do this?
Yeah.
You know, where do we?
I got a spoiler for my car.
Oh, my
you
God.
Should come check it out.
Yeah.
Check out this exhaust.
Let's wash our cars.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's like Fast thing. And the Furious.
It was. Exactly. Is there a Fast and the Furious sound?
Oh, my God. Yes. If we that had was... that on the sampler, we need the revving of the engine.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't have it. Sorry, guys.
What does a Spanish kid from Southern California say when his homework flies out the window?
Ay, caramba.
Come back, essay. No?
Oh, essay.
Is that bad?
Good structure.
Oh, so funny. That town in Northern California is Arcata.
Oh, Arcata. Sorry. Arcata. Yeah, I'm an idiot. Arcata. Sorry.
Something like that.
What were we talking anyway. About?
We
again?
Were talking about naming restaurants and dishes.
Oh.
Because Heritage yeah. Foods learned that when we called our quarter hogs and our eighth cattle, which actually was invented by Brian, a way to cut a cattle into eighths It's about 50 pounds each, and you get every cut the same, except maybe for one or two cuts. It's either like a skirt or a flank. Other than that, you get one of everything. No one bought it after the first year or two. And then we called it a share, a cattle share, and we sold 40 of them, like, within a week. It was so funny, and we couldn't tell why. And also, so we called the hog share the hog share instead of the quarter hog, and we sold 25 of those and hadn't sold one in years.
Like, does a name appeal to a different demographic, or by calling something a simpler name, is it more approachable? I don't know. Just a...
How about pizzas? Do you have
does a pizza do better because...
Stephen Hawking or something, yeah. It sells, and then...
Like, does it do well because you know what's in it, or because you don't know what's in it, and you have to ask?
I mean, you always know, like, for us, all of our, it says what's on the pizza on the menu, so it's not like an elusive thing, but I would say it like the more generic names usually tend to work better. Mm. It's like when you have like a really funny, like the Crispy Glover or something like that. It's a great pizza, but it's like sometimes people just don't want to say something because it's crazy. Like, you know, if you go to an Asian restaurant and you can't read what it is, you may not order it because you're like, I'm not going to say this word. Yeah. I don't even know. Like, I'll point to it. Or if it has a number, I'll be like 72, but I'm not even going
to
attempt this.
My husband does that. When he's nervous to say something, he's just like, this one?
Yeah.
Or he'll say one of the words in the name and not the other one. And I'm like, come on.
Well, I like the Stephen Hawking's because it's instinctive. What's in it? Ramps.
But it's not.
People still
never got that forever.
I do not think that is intuitive.
No, it was definitely not intuitive.
Oh, obvious.
I wanted to name the ramp pizza the animal chin after the famous ramp from the Pal Peralta movie, which is probably one of the most famous ramps ever.
Wow. That's an honor.
How do you guys feel? Go ahead.
We've got we have like five local history books that we've done at the Alameda Sun Publishing Company here. And I got to tell you, we have two that are on the same topic, and like volume one and volume two. And volume two doesn't sell as well because we think the title isn't as catchy.
What are the titles of these two books?
Well, it's about a historic cemetery. And the first one is just generic. It's Mountain View Cemetery, the name of the cemetery. The second one is Volume 2, Lives of the Dead.
Yes.
At Mountain View
of
Cemetery.
Of course that sells better. Come on. Eric.
No, he's saying it doesn't. Well.
It doesn't?
I'm with Brandon.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
That one should sell
that's
better.
Such
for
a
sure.
better
the word
name.
Dead in it.
That's there such a better name.
What were you going to say,
Chef Rich?
I was just you just mentioned about going to a Chinese restaurant and seeing seven things that say chicken with ginger. Like, what is that? What does that feel like? And what is that? Is it
makes them look like they're experts on that ingredient.
Yeah.
I think it means it's all they can cook, and they just use the same ingredients for everything. It's to ensure that they don't have waste. Maybe
they're like, we got an order for a number five. They're like, did you say five? They're like, it doesn't matter. We only have
five
one
or
thing.
Seven.
They're
five
all
or
the
seven.
Same.
All right, wait. We got to take a quick break, and we are going to be back with a little bit more with Chef Rich Ho.
And we got to find out what's on the cover of the Alameda Sun, because I feel a little insular without knowing that.
We're going to find out from Eric. Just stick around. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Foster Sundry, a specialty grocery located in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Since opening in August 2015, Foster Sundry has evolved into a neighborhood hub for weekend brunch, weeknight groceries, coffee on your morning commute, a draft beer after work, and so much more. Their cheese counter, whole animal butcher, and produce section make grocery shopping a pleasure. Foster Sundry also offers catering and wholesale. Learn more at fostersundry.com. That's FOSTERSUNDRY.com.
All right. And we're back. This is the main course OG. I'm out of my back. I just have some background music. Oh, lovely. Okay, this is the main course OG, broadcasting live from the back of Roberta's here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm in studio with my favorite co-hosts, Patrick Martins, Brandon Hoy, I'm assuming that was for Patrick, that not was you, an boy. Right?
I feel like that was. I think we could double down on
for
that.
For all the hosts.
Right. Yeah. It for was all an oi for the hoy.
That counts Mike Edison's in there, too.
Yeah, Mike Edison, too, who we had back just before the break, and we hope to have him in studio with us soon. So we are here with Chef Rich Ho of Ho Foods in the East Village, and we were just talking about naming dishes, and I wanted to ask you, Rich, yep. You have a signature dish, a recipe you have spent years perfecting. Will you tell us about it? It is the staple of your menu,
yeah,
is it
that's,
not?
That's all we have. Actually, that's not true. We come off that way, but it is. It's beef noodle soup, and it's a dish that all Taiwanese, not actually, that's not even true. It's a weird dish. It's one of the most popular dishes in Taiwan, but there's not a lot of cows in Taiwan. It's all imported beef. I don't know how to get into this in a short way, but it's a dish my mom made a lot, and it's also a dish that not all Taiwanese people are into or eat. You know, some Taiwanese people don't eat beef.
Is there any farmland in Taiwan?
There's a lot of farmland.
It's mostly farmland.
Yeah, but there's a huge mountain range in the middle, and they grow tea. And it's a beautiful place, and the cows they grow. Some of them are like these big oxen with bumps on their head, and it's you know, you can get beef there. They call them wen ti niu, which just means warm body beef, which means it's freshly slaughtered and it hasn't been frozen. And
do you pay more for that warm body beef?
It's a good description, right? I don't know. Sometimes, but it's not like crazy expensive. You know, I think, you know, this is again, there's so much to talk about, but it's like there's tons of Kobe beef in Taiwan and Angus beef and, you know, all this stuff and, you know, beef from New Zealand or Australia or something like that.
But so I read that you told the New York Times that every Taiwanese mom who comes in tells you a different secret to the broth. Some say apples, cilantro, star anise. Do you have a lot of, I know you said that a lot of Taiwanese people and friends have reached out since seeing the New York Times, but is the core of your customer base Taiwanese or?
I'd say a lot of
white Americans.
Half and half. You know, I don't know who comes or why they come, and but Taiwanese people from all over the place show up, and you know, they all have their very strong opinions about how something should be done.
Do they like your soup? I mean, obviously they do, but I mean, right. You get mostly positives, right? There must be many great ways of doing.
Yeah,
that dish.
So I think it's like you know, I think
were they upset?
They're never upset, but the child in me feels like
you like
they're always
disappointed.
You.
They're judging, yeah. And they're disappointed in some ways. And I think that, you know, I don't know if this is cool or not cool, but like we try to imagine, like, you know, if you were a mom and pop shop, and if we were them, kind of serving this food, you know, how we would approach it and how we would taste it. Because
so you're not a mom and pop shop?
I mean, I don't have kids yet. Is it?
Oh. I don't know. I guess I would think
a
mom and pop is being like small,
a one-off,
yeah. You know, chef owned.
Yeah.
Pets count.
Yeah. But I think it's so cool. I mean, the restaurants that we admire. So like
we could just call it a pop shop.
Pop shop. Mr. Mister.
Yeah.
He's recently married. He could be mom too.
Mom and pop. There
isn't
you go.
Mom and pop shop. Yeah.
So now, but are you doing the same thing as they do? I mean, in a weird way, not to be insulting to them in Taiwan, but are you using green market ingredients of heirloom seeds and maybe they're using more commodity stuff or no?
In Taiwan, they cook. There's so much farm fresh produce.
Okay.
And so I think in that sense, they cook that way a lot. Beef, I think they just get the best that they can afford.
So your beef might be better than theirs, but their raw other ingredients are probably on par.
Yeah, I think like the vegetables and the spices and all that in Taiwan is like they grow incredible ingredients overall.
Have they noticed that in all the comments you get from the people who really know that? Like, oh, the beef is tastier or there's a beefy flavor to this?
Yeah, well, in Taiwan sometimes, or growing up, you know, our parents wanted to, you know, kind of wash out a lot of the beef flavor. You know what I mean? Like, they didn't like the gaminess. They didn't like the...
It was supposed to have just a touch.
It was just
a
supposed
touch
to have
of
a
meat.
Touch. It was very subtle, and it was about, like, you know, beef was kind of a luxury, too. And now that we get, you know, nicer, all that, you know, I don't mind having the taste of a stronger beef flavor. And also, you know, I think people in America don't, I don't know if that's traditional or untraditional, but beef tastes good.
People love the taste of beef. I think there's even a flavor packet that's beef, right?
Oh, really?
Like you can get it, like you can put it on your chips if you want.
Yeah,
beef,
just
right?
Pour it into water, and suddenly you have a beefy broth.
Sounds delicious.
I mean, I think Max's the first thing he ever learned image-wise was the two dots and the smiley face, you know, and then the second one was like a hamburger with the patty and the bun and the little grill under it. You know, that image is like the most iconic.
And a hamburger
image.
Always makes you smile, right?
I mean, look at Shake Shack. Ann loves going there. The kids love eating cheeseburgers. Yeah, beef is. It wins, although chicken is doing pretty well, too.
Yeah. So, Rich, you know, before having your own restaurant, you know, I assume you were working in other kitchens. Do you have a mentor? And is there a particular lesson that you learned from that person or several people?
I think sometimes maybe I thought of people as mentors and maybe they didn't know I was their mentee. You know,
I think
just,
that's allowed.
Right? Is that still a mentor?
Mentee?
Yes.
Is that a mentee? What is a mentee? Is that a is
no,
an
no,
animal?
That's right. That's right.
I think you can have a manatee. I think you can have a mentor
really cool
even if they don't know that they're so...
As long as you're interacting with them. You can't just be looking through a plate glass window and be like, that's my mentor in there. But no, as a, they know they're mentoring.
Yeah. Well, the people I worked with, I really saw them as, especially a couple of them, like that, this sounds bad, like shitty older brothers I never had, but actually were very good at what they were doing. And, they've worked in restaurants for forever and people love them from all, like not just the restaurant industry, and they had police friends, they had whatever, they're just people, like plumbers love them and, whatever. Like anyone who come in, which is they have had such like personal relationships with everyone. And
do you think that's why you did a small restaurant, so you could be personal?
I think that's because it's what we could afford, right? And
that's true. New York real estate.
Do you always do the same? Did they teach you to do one thing great, and always? And I also wanted to ask: does your dish, how greatly does it differ in flavor from season to season, or is it almost always the same?
Right. I mean, we think it tastes different all the time, and I hope it doesn't come off that way to our customers, but maybe it's just because we're constantly tasting. The recipe is the same. It's very similar, and, we follow it, and we taste. And I mean, you got to always taste as you go, right? But it does change a little bit, throughout the seasons, and maybe the fat tastes a little bit different. It's a different color sometimes.
If there's a 1 to 100,
right?
How often are you hitting 98, 99, 100 in your mind?
I think that's like a therapist question. I would say never.
Right.
Well, I didn't say 100. I said the top 3-4%.
98, 99 is very high.
So you may be there only very, very seldom, you
would
say.
Does it happen? I hope this isn't. I hope this is not a reflection of our product.
No, not at all. I think
more of my personality. It's just
that's what makes it great.
Yeah, and you have a humble personality. You're not saying I'm at 99.
I also think that's an unreasonable place to like live. Like if you're in the top 10th percentile,
if you're batting
99. You're like
no. I say, how often does your soup hit that?
If you could live in 90, if you could live above 88, like you're killing it. Like 99 is crazy. That's like once a year. You're like, okay. We did 99.
Well, that's great. That's great.
Like, I just wish I made
also,
a bigger
If you think that you're doing 100, you're gonna lose very soon.
Sure,
because that means that you don't think that you could do better.
Can you ever hit a 98 or even 97 or whatever number and not just have it hit there technically, or does the story and the prop whatever that does that matter?
Yeah.
I want to get back to the food for a second here. Rich, I'm curious about your noodles. Can you tell us about your noodles?
We get our noodles from someone else. There's a guy named Rich. He's been
another guy named Rich.
Another guy named Rich. Wow. Yeah.
A Richard or a Rich?
He's
double
a Richard.
Rich.
We call him Rich. He might be a Rich. I feel really offended because he's a, he's very
I'm glad
nice
you decided
to
take the Rich route.
Yeah. I like Richard. It's a good name.
Richard, because you don't want to make that in-house, that's something that's better delegated.
Yeah, I think that it's something we're working on, and we will sooner or later, for sure. But right now, I think Rich does a great job, and we like seeing him.
I'm a big fan of your
turnip
cake.
Don't cut Rich out.
Oh, yeah, don't cut Rich out.
Come on a little bit.
I like this, like Rich squared.
Yeah.
It's,
are they wheat noodles or like rice noodles?
It's a couple of dicks. is someone said.
It's a wealth of riches.
I only said that because someone told me to try to be funny in this podcast, and that was.
I like Patrick's though. That's good. Yeah. That was a good one. But Patrick's a wealth of riches.
Wealth of riches.
I like that.
So wait, Eric wants to know if they're rice noodles or if they are
wheat noodles.
It's just wheat and flour and maybe a touch of salt in there, and that's about it. Maybe some cornstarch to coat at the end.
They're flat noodles, right?
They're flat and they're circle, and they're called, you know, they call them Shanghai noodles here, but in Taiwan they call them just white noodles. It's kind of the plain, you know, they're
warm-bodied noodles.
Yeah, the warm-bodied noodles.
Freshly slaughtered.
Yeah.
Caucasian
grass-fed
noodles.
Caucasian noodles.
I like that. That should be the new name on the dish. So,
any new project, chef?
New project.
And for you too, Brandon. And we also want to know about Alameda Sun. Let's do a new project final question.
Did you guys want to?
No, you first.
You first. Or any events? Anything?
New projects. We're looking for a slightly bigger space, just to put it out there.
12 seats.
12 seats.
Yeah.
You're growing by 20%.
All those real estate brokers can start calling at 3:30 today.
Great, 3:30,
right?
Yes. Block out the plaque guys. just so we just want to do more.
Would that be for a second location, or you would?
Yeah, you know, a place where you can put a mixer in there and make some noodles and maybe put a tandoor oven in. I don't know, just put some fun stuff and have a walk. I'm excited to have We cook on induction burners, but I'm excited to have a walk with some fire.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love that you specialize in one thing and you yourself do it all the time and you're always trying to get better. You say you're never at above 98%. I mean, it really, really is awesome. And that's what the kids today, not to be, I'm 47.
Yeah, you should be, you will
you're
be someone's
mentor.
Yeah.
Do one thing great.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
But thank you for having a few other dishes because we do like selling you pork.
Of course.
Because there's no pork in the soup.
We do pork over rice, and it's just pork over rice. And I think people really appreciate. In fact, we have one lady. I don't want to put her name out there, but she.
Well, you've thrown everyone else under the bus today.
I am. That's the theme of the day. But she orders.
Her name is Jane.
Yes. She orders an insane amount of your pork that, you know, we cook and someone else delivers. But she'll order about 10 orders during lunchtime, 5 to 10 orders at dinner time. So I think you guys have fans.
Well, I hope she lives a long time. It doesn't sound like she will, but I hope she lives
a long time. Is it delivered to an office? I hope.
No, we did some. It's a. This is sounding really creepy.
A lot of pets.
It's just a person's house.
Private home?
Wow.
Yeah. There's either a big family or she.
Maybe there's a competing Whole Foods there. Or have you ever been concerned?
I would like to be a fly on the wall there.
I'm very curious.
Is there a resale market?
There's probably a lot of them.
Yeah, for sure. So, Eric, tell us what's on the cover of the Alameda Sun today? It's Thursday.
What's the big
news? We're continuing our west end development of our little island city here across the bay from San Francisco, and we're going to be groundbreaking on a new ferry terminal.
Nice.
So people can get to San Francisco earlier next Thursday, a week from today.
I love that ferry.
A big front page story.
It's big and it's
nice
beautiful.
Ride,
it's smooth. We loved it.
So this will be the ferry coming from Vallejo will also stop in Alameda?
You know, I'm not exactly sure the routes yet. I mean, and police. I mean, this is years off before they're actually going to get this running. But, I'm not sure if Vallejo is going to connect, but it really should.
Right? You would think.
I mean, all of
With all of the traffic to Oakland as
you
well.
You heard the idea here first from Brandon Hoy.
Indeed.
It should connect.
One other cool thing I'm working on for new projects, if you want to mention that, is writing up a property that's for sale. That supposedly the lead singer of The Doors, Jim Morrison, lived there for a short time after he graduated high school. Very hard to verify these details, but we do know that he was here for part of his high school career because his dad was in the Navy, and Alameda has this big Navy base here. And he was in Alameda High School for 2 years. He was on the swim team. In fact, his swim coach is still living. I spoke with him the other day. And it's just kind of interesting. It's really hard to verify details about this guy. I mean,
sounds like George Costanza saying he had John Voight's car. Remember Chevy?
Yeah, exactly. Anybody would want to claim, you know, they had somebody famous live in their place when they're trying to sell it.
And how is the house?
It's a pretty amazing 1886 Queen Anne Victorian that has been added and remodeled and turned into a boarding house and a bed and back breakfast and then back into a single family.
They added more doors? Did he add more doors?
They added more bathrooms, dude. The thing
sir,
has
you
seven
got
bedrooms
it.
And 10 bathrooms.
Wow.
Because it used to be a bed and breakfast. So it's like 8 full baths and 2 half baths.
That's amazing. Place.
Yeah, definitely huge. A place to visit in Alameda.
I don't know, 3.4 million or something if you got it. Around.
Sell a few more copies of The Sun, huh?
Patrick's got it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
Sure. Let me take a little loan.
I'll save myself the
main course OG
ventures.
Will go all in on that property.
We're selling a lot of endangered breeds right now.
Rich,
you can
do the noodles. You can do the broth out of the front door.
Great.
We'll have a little window.
Endangered species broths.
Well, first season, what's up next? What is up next? What show is next now in this season?
Matt, you want to chime in? Who's next?
Taste of the Past.
All right.
Taste of the Past
is up next at 11. Stick around, and we will see you guys next week. Have a good one, everyone. Thanks.
Well, thanks so much.
The Main Course OG is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.